run free, your heart run free, your heart run free, your heart run free, your heart run free. Welcome to episode 2 of season 9 of the Young Hearts Run Free podcast. We have a very interesting guest coming up, somebody that's been no avoiding us, but we've managed to track them down for a good wee bit. But before we get to that, wee bit of a catch up for the Lang Toon. It was the Ochterarder Running Festival last weekend. And fresh out of his bed after a couple of days, we've got Mr. Stephen Watt. How you doing, Stevie boy?
I'm still buzzing, John. It was a sensational weekend in glorious Ochterarder.
It certainly was. The weather that the race director had ordered showed up, didn't it? Great for the spectators, maybe not for the runners.
It was a tad on the warm side, especially on the Saturday, and runners were greeted by blue skies and sunshine, and yeah, maybe sneaking at about the mid-20s.
Aye, yeah. See, if we fast forward though, would you rather that, or would you rather the Sunday night when it was absolutely pishing with rain, you know?
That would have put a dampener on things.
There wouldn't have been the excitement and the vibe in the sort of finish area or in that. It's like a bowl, isn't it? That the shape of the finish area for the spectators. And there's an ice cream van and there was the purvey. We'll come to the purvey. But it was just a fantastic atmosphere. And loads of people came up to me. I've got to give a shout out to Leslie Richardson, the female vet 70 winner, both Saturday and Sunday, who cornered me on the Sunday afternoon and was quite emotional and saying she'd had an absolutely fantastic weekend, one of the best running festivals she's ever been at. You can't get any bigger testimony than that. She had a great weekend. But loads of other people also approached me and said the same. Some folk, we spoke about it last week, or you certainly put a shout out on the socials too to for people, even if you're not going to be running, come along, just be part of it. There was loads of folk did that and saying they'll be signing up next year. So, you know, it was brilliant.
It was the best yet. I think that was our seventh iteration of the running festival, including a couple of COVID virtual years in there. And maybe there's a wee bit of recency bias going on here, but I think it was the best yet.
Yeah. We've had smatterings of all that wee bits before, but it all sort of came together and everything was brilliant. Also, some great performances for runners as well.
Well, let's talk about that, the performances from the runners. So on the Saturday morning, we had the main event, the Junior Fun Run, and that was like herding cats.
Yeah.
Into the starting pen.
Shout out to Mrs. Rollo, who saved me. Mrs. Rollo came along, took the mic off me and took control of that pen of caged tigers. So,
yes. Mrs. Rollo, a primary school teacher at the school who hosts our event. Maybe observed that John was needing to ken how to hold a class to attention rather than saying, "Hoy you, over there." So, yeah, that was great. And, you know, that just sets it up, doesn't it, that? Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's a kilometre or so, the Junior Fun Run, and they belt round and they're full of beans, all the kids, and hairing about going in the wrong direction and all. And you about one about crashed into you, I noticed, John.
Like, we boy with a seat stop on.
Exactly that. So that kind of got us up and running. And then after that is the 10K, the Ochterarder 10K. And we had I think around about upwards of 300 people on the start line. And it's not the easiest of 10K courses, I think it's fair to say. It's a fast start, and then because it's then there's a bit of downhill, and then you know in your head inevitably there's going to be a sting in the tail because I need to get back up the hill that I've just comfortably ran down pretty fast. Throw in the warmer than the unseasonably warm temperatures, I'd say. So you've got there's a tough wee course, I think, when you throw in the warmth. But I think the lads race, the guy's race, Blair Mackay. He came down from, he was up Port Mahoke way. He's from Sutherland AC representing, and he's taken the win in the 10K in the males. I'd say a comfortable enough gap to second place, where it was one of our own, Martin Heggie, taking the second spot on the podium for the 10K and the guys, and then Alan Bartlett from up at Newbridge Dunes Running Club, who are well represented over the weekend. Brilliant to see those orange and blue vests. He took third spot. However, over in the female 10K at the Sharp End, things were a bit spicy, John.
I still see it in my head. Yeah, it was phenomenal. Great finish.
It was Jade Greenshields who took the win. Jade is a local Auchterarder lassie, and she won with a pretty remarkable finishing home straight sprint by 1 second. So a real dip for the line type moment. And it was, yeah, pretty awesome to watch. Rona van Rensburg was the Fife AC athlete who came in second place, and she was obviously disappointed at the end, as you would be, but that is running, and yeah, it's a competition, it's a race after all. Yeah. So well done to Jade for that moment. I think it will go down in history of the Running Festival as one of our iconic moments. And then another local lassie, Virginia Cryo, listener of the podcast for a long, long time, came and finished the podium for the females in third place. So that was the 10K. But then all the other legends and heroes starts tripling in after it, and everybody was spent on the finish line. We had to order extra water. Thank you to Highland Spring, local company, who are one of our race partners. Extra water, because the temperatures were that high that folk were coming over the finish line. Maybe usually no bother grabbing a bottle of water. Give me two bottles of water and just launching it over their cell. Local residents were out with hoses and stuff like that, cooling the runners off as they come through the estate that it goes through as well, which I think was well appreciated by the runners, and we were thankful as race organisers that folk were doing that.
Yeah, and again, a number of runners said how much they really enjoyed that little spray of mist, on like the mist thing, running through that for the residents with their hoses and just cooling them down, just that wee bit. But it just gives you the fact that somebody's doing it gives you a good vibe, and then you get the cool effect of the water. But yeah, I could certainly see people. And I noticed the volunteers had moved the water from where the gazebo was right up to the finish line. So as soon as somebody crossed the line, the water was being handed to them right away. So there was a few runners go over and hit their knees on the turf and all that sort of stuff. It was dramatic, but it was absolutely fantastic, man. The buzz was phenomenal. Got to say a thank you as well. I was trying to keep them going. Didn't have to work too hard. The spectators were really on board with it and applauding people in, you know. So the local community, and obviously you've got people's family and friends who maybe come with them if they've travelled. There was folk travelled quite a bit to be there. Our pals for the Lakes, for Washington Run Club, were there.
That was brilliant to see them.
And Joe and David were brilliant. Yeah,
John and I bumped into them in the Black Bull down in the Lakes and mentioned that we had this running festival coming up, and they signed up and came up the Newcastle way. So it's always brilliant to see those connections and then keep those connections. And that was just one example of it. There was others over the weekend as well that we'll maybe touch on. So that was the Saturday. Sunday heralds the Auchterarder Half Marathon, and again, I think we were about 250 or so on the start line for that, and mere warm temperatures. A lot of people doing the double dare, which is the 10K and the half marathon. I think there was about 100 signed up for it. I don't know how many actually finished in the end to do them both. So the people who had ran the Saturday kind of knew what to expect, because it was a much similar day on the Sunday. Maybe not quite as toasty, but it's no the most straightforward, the half marathon routes. So it's got a funny elevation chart when you look at it, almost inverted. So 6.5 miles downhill, 6.5 miles uphill, roughly. It doesn't quite, you know, feel like that, but when you look at the elevation chart, it does. Hilly, but the hill's never a hill steep enough that you think that that's a nightmare, but they go on a bit. Mm-hmm. So again, throwing the heat, extra water out in the course, etc., etc., to keep everybody safe. But it really showcases the surrounding scenery that we're blessed with in Ochterarder really well, right over to Creef, Strathairn, and up to the Munros, up at Ben Vorlich and Benny Hone.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Yes. Great. And it's brilliant when it all comes together, because there's a fair bit goes into it, and it's brilliant to see it all happening and folk turning up and running and spectating and volunteering. It gives you a wee warm glow to see it all unfold.
Mm-hmm. And from a personal point of view, I've been privileged to be involved with ARF for a few years now. Seeing people that have changed on the running journey, people that are now, you know, they're progressing, they're doing a faster 10K, they're doing a faster half marathon, and they're just more confident in a running sense, you know. And it's been brilliant to watch, because you can change a fair bit over 5, 6, 7 years, you know. So yeah, there's people that know it's exciting to think what they're going to do next, because they've now nailed the half marathon distance, right? They've now nailed that. So uh-huh. And some people have went on and done marathons, ultra marathons, but you see people now talking about these sorts of things more, and that I find that really exciting. Got to give a shout out to everybody that was in that field and on the track, and all the volunteers and all the marshals, because it doesn't just happen, does it? You know, there's a lot of organisation goes on behind the scenes, so it's only right that we give a nod to everybody that was out there giving up their own time to make it such a great event, eh?
Definitely. Yourself included in that, John. John was our master of ceremonies over the weekend, and it's a role that he takes on with gusto and a certain uniqueness, and it's much appreciated. And yeah, it's also a draw, isn't it, for our masses.
Well,
the MC, John Cassidy, on the
mic. I must say, it's never planned. I never know what's going to come out of my mouth. But it seems to work. It seems to be all right. And again, I had to actually lay the stickers out on the table where I was, Stephen, because I was floating about. But when I went back, the table was pretty much bare. People had been helping themselves, which was the whole idea. But thank you to everybody that come along, said hello. I photobombed a few folk on the podium when they were getting their photos taken, but that's just what I would do. But yeah, I'm sure it happened to you as well. There was loads of people come up and they were introducing themselves and saying, I must enjoy the podcast. Really, really appreciate that.
Again, I spoke about giving you a warm glow. Things like that, when you've got people coming up and thanking you for putting out the podcast, for you know, the guests that we have on just for our crack and things like that. And that sounds a bit cliched to say, it makes it all worthwhile, but it really does, you know, hit home for John and I to say, actually, this wee chat that we started having during COVID, and it's got a really loyal community built up around it. And see, when you meet people in person, and that's extra special. So thank you if you were one of those who said hello, grabbed a photo, came along and ran, whatever. It was hugely appreciated.
Definitely. And we should give a wee shout out to Stephen Burrell, Fiona Ainslie, Johnny Logan, there was a wee twist on the Fiona Ainslie prize winning, wasn't there? But Johnny Logan might come along with her as well. But it was great to see. I don't know, man. It was just, there's something special about that. There's loads of listeners, and we're thankful for you, for every single one of you. But to see people running around that finish track, that, I don't know, I certainly feel a connection with folk. And it was absolutely brilliant to see. So, brilliant.
All sorts of awesome. And Stephen Burrell, winner of our Young Hearts Run Free Double Dare entry, and he came bearing gifts, lemon drizzle cake and millionaire shortbread for the purvey, for the goody gazebo, and maybe had my fair share of that lemon drizzle cake, shall we say. And Fiona and Johnny, Fiona had won a Double Dare prize as well, travelling a fair distance, for down Duns, down yep. near Berwick-upon-Tweed. So we was only able to make it up on the Sunday, so we decided to give big pal of the show, Johnny Logan, the second race spot as well. And that was even better, because we got two for the price of one for yeah. Duns, which was great. So thanks for making the pilgrimage.
Definitely.
The gathering of awesomeness part deux.
Yeah, I've got to give a shout out about the millionaire shortbread that Stephen Burrell brought as well. I actually got chased for the purvey table before the start because I was on my third slice of it. It was brilliant, man.
Well, I think that would have kept you going for much of the day. Three slices of that.
But I learned for the Saturday. I never ate much on the Saturday. I was too excited, man. And then
I think you were. I was watching you and I was like, he's not been near the buffet table. And I was like a wee bit of concern for your welfare.
Aye. And then I got a sandwich, and then your man Leroy rocks up, and he was helping me sell my sandwiches. Oh, we've got to give a shout out to the photographers as well, of which Leroy was one. Brilliant images.
Yeah.
They're emerging on social media, so thank you to them as well.
Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. There's only... I think I said this to somebody, there's only one thing better than taking part in ARF. It's the Monday of flicking through all the photos on Facebook and tagging all the and seeing how good or not so good you looked and all of that kind of jazz and having a bit of crack with it as well. I love doing that and I love seeing everybody's comments and stuff. Just to finish off the half marathon results, Blair Mackay took the win in the guys, so he was doing the double, won the 10k and the half marathon. Martin Heggie, it was almost like deja vu for the Saturday. He was second in the half marathon, and Kenny Robertson came third. I think he was Kirkintilloch Olympian.
Yeah.
And over in the lasses race, Janet Dixon took the win in the females. Janet also won the half marathon last year. She beat her own course record time, so 1:27 and change. And then Emma Murray was second. Emma ran for Scotland in the Anglo-Celtic Plate earlier this year.
Yep.
Over in Ireland. So it was great to see Emma looking fresh as a daisy coming over the line, and Jade Greenshield making up the podium. So it's been a right successful weekend for her in third. And then we also have the Double Dare, where we combine both your 10K time and your half marathon time to give us a leaderboard for the Double Dare. And Jade won the female Double Dare. Lindsay Jack was second and Tracy Philp was third. I think Tracy was for Portobello. We'll speak a wee bit more about them. And then over in the male double dare, Blair Mackay. Well, you win the 10K, you win the half marathon, you're also going to win the double dare. And Martin Heggie, second place, the double dare. And making up the double dare podium, Jerry Healy, part of the Malaga crew.
Yeah, it was my first time at the weekend meeting Jerry. We've interacted a few times on social media with posts and wee messages, but it was lovely to meet him and Paul Stoddart as well. Lovely to meet them both for the first time for me at the weekend. So yeah, good guys.
It's magic. But then everybody else who finished and achieved what they set out to do, it was just great to see everybody at the finish line with their medals and t-shirts and getting stuck into the purvey. I think we had a special couple join us at the half marathon, Ali and Alan Risk,
Portobello,
and a bunch of club mates with Portobello Running Club. They had been married on the Saturday and decided the first thing that they wanted to do as a married couple was to come and run the Ochter Arder half marathon. And they were in fine spirits, the lot of them, and quite rightly so. I think they'd been married quite locally. I think the prospect of a half marathon on a Sunday morning after getting married on the Saturday would be something that I'm not sure I would be up for doing. But boy, were they up for doing it. And Alan got a bloody personal best, 1:24 or 1:25 or something like that.
Just shows you he's flying, man. He's on the wings of a dove. That's how he's feeling right now. And I do believe they were in doing the Perth Patlin on the morning of the wedding as well. So they've had a rare weekend. Brilliant weekend.
That's great. No, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for coming through. Next year's date is the 7th and 8th of September. Date for your diaries already. Saturday the 7th, Sunday the 8th of September. Getting about it. Entries open in January. And we've already booked the main man, John Cassidy, for the mic. He's yet to confirm through his agent if he's making it, but he likes to tease us a wee bit. And if you're really, really up for it and you really, really want to see your Young Hearts Run Free posts before the end of the year, we'll also be at the Chitwe Trail Race on Saturday the 4th of November, which is another part of our Ochter Ardor Running Festival stable of events. We've got three.
It's the UK's premier 10K trail race is the Chitwe. That's the official title of it. So it'd be great, again, to if you come along and see us and say hello. It's a brilliant day. Absolutely brilliant day, that.
It is a good day. And it's the Chitwe trail race because the shape of the route is like a chili pepper, which is worth coming to do it just for the Strava shits and giggles alone.
Yeah. And it's also kind of spicy as well. But there we go. Right, shall we before we move on to this week's guest, I've got to speak a wee bit about a previous guest and a very very previous chat we had. We had a chat with this lady down in the lakes, and it's almost like we planned this. Down in the lakes in July, part of our itinerary for the weekend was to speak with previous Lakeland 100 winner Emma Stewart on the Friday night in front of the gathering that was there in the marquee. And we had a brilliant chat with Emma. She can talk, we can talk, so we had no bother filling that space. We're recording this on Thursday, and on Wednesday night, Emma has finished first lady in the Tour de Géants. So the Tour de Géants is called the Tour 330. It's 330 kilometres, which is 205 miles. You get 150 hours to complete it. Emma finished first lady in 82 hours and 21 minutes. So a massive shout out and well done to Emma Stewart. And it just brings us back to the lakes, Stephen, with our guest for this week.
Everything goes back to the lakes. Folk will be saying, the lakes. Never heard them speak about that over the last few months. Listen, it's pretty much an omnipresent thing on the Young Hearts Run Free. It's a place that we now hold pretty dear, and it's a special place. So we'll unapologetically keep on speaking about the lakes. This week's guest is a lad who is also pretty addicted to running down in the lakes and at the 50 and 100, more so the 100. And he's a boy that we've been trying to get on the podcast for a wee while. He's been on the list. You want to see the list, by the way?
We've got a healthy list. But we speak about this in the episode. Because of our role this year, we had a front row seat to people coming in. And I'm sure you'd have seen some of that on the social media, some of the great work that Stephen did with the firsts and the hundreds and the fifties coming in. So, big reveal, you probably know by the name of the episode already. This week's guest is Mr. Neil McNichol, who won the Lakeland 50 this year. He was quite surprised he won it, and he speaks about that, or to know that he won it, he speaks about that brilliantly in this episode. I hope you enjoy this as much as we did recording it. Enjoy.
Big welcome along to the Young Hearts Run Free podcast. Neil, how are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you for having me, gents.
More than welcome. We're really looking forward to this chat. You've been, we say this quite a lot, you've been on our radar a while, cha-cha-cha, but we're no lying when we say that. And I'm pretty sure we've got a lot to cover, so we're not going to waste much time getting into the nitty-gritty, because I'm a wee bit worried, John, that we'll no get through everything and we'll wait to ask Neil back. And it was hard enough dealing with your agent in the first place to get you to commit to this one, so I want to get our money's worth out of this, Neil. And I know that the hordes of listeners have been whet, their appetite is whetted. So yeah, what we normally do is just get a wee bit of your backstory, a little bit about why you run and what got you into running, all that kind of stuff, your history, so to speak. So it's over to you for that one.
Yeah, thanks. So how I got into running, I suppose I was brought up on a farm on the west coast of Scotland. So I was doing farm work when I was younger, and it wasn't a big, don't remember a lot about school sports and school sports, primary school sports. There wasn't a lot going on. We had the sports day and stuff like that, and I remember getting the wee rosettes and stuff like that, wee coloured ribbons, and that was all very good when I was young. And then as I got older, I suppose my father was in a tug of war team with the other farmers, and that was their excuse to go to the Highland Games and tug of war for like 15 minutes and then have a beer in the tent. And so while they were doing the tug of war, when I got old enough, I was thinking, oh, they do wee hill races and stuff at these Highland Games, I'll have a shot of that, and kill yourself going up a wee hill for 50 pence or a ticket or the local prize or wherever we went. And so got into a few hill races, just at occasional Highland Games that we went to and stuff like that, or agricultural shows and stuff like that. And that was my sort of first sort of competitive running, I suppose. But I didn't take it that seriously. I wasn't training or anything. I was just, while we were there, I would take my shorts and I'd have a go at it, like sort of thing. I left school, didn't do a lot of high school, wasn't a lot of sports at high school. I didn't really do any running in high school, and left school, and then joined the Marines when I was about 20. And obviously did physical things during that time, and not a lot of competitive stuff, but just sort of insane endurance stuff, but never really competitive. And then when I left the Marines, I thought, right, I'm going to be trying to keep fit a bit. So moved to London at the time when I left the Marines, and just did the odd 10K in London and a half marathon here and there and abouts. And I was going to the gym and stuff and keeping fit. And then obviously you're in London, so London Marathon, oh, let's have a shot at that. And as per every, probably most people, you can't get into London Marathon for love nor money. And so I entered about 3 or 4 years in a row, never got in. I didn't really fancy the charity route and having to raise $3,000 minimum or whatever it was at the time. And so, I was training along and I was thinking, right, bugger this, I'm going to get into the good for age category. So I found a marathon outside London, somewhere in Kent, can't even remember where it was, but just a kind of local marathon in Kent somewhere, and thought, right, let's give that one a go and try and get under, I think it must have been sub-3 at the time for I don't know, age 18 to 40 category senior men to be sub-3 or whatever. I think they've hardened it up now to increase the female participation and reduce the male participation in the good for age, but at the time it was sub-3, so yeah. Hammered myself in training in London when I was working in London. I don't think I could do that now, actually, because I'm thinking back and it was like obviously on the early morning runs, but it was just like running through the streets of London dead early and jumping pavements and just going straight all the way out along the Thames and then coming back. The dullest training you could probably ever do, like, but you just did it because you had to. I wouldn't leave now, like, it'd just be like, God, get me on the trail somewhere, like, you know, but needs must at the time. And so, got into that marathon and somewhere in Kent. Got 2:55, I think. So chuffed a bit with that. Got into the London Marathon. First marathon, yeah.
2:55.
What year was that, Neil? What year? Can you remember what year?
Yeah, I was just coming on to that. So it was the 2006 London Marathon. So that would have been 2005. That would have been autumn. Well, it must have been before the entry process. So late summer, autumn 2005, I think. And then obviously submit to, I don't know if you had to get in at the same time as the normal entries, but you just submit, here's my proof, here's the link to the results, and Giza place in London Marathon 2006, please. And so I got into that and then trained again, obviously, all the way through winter, going up to April 2006, hammering the pavements and the dull streets of London. And then, rocked up at London Marathon, good for age category. I am the bee's knees. We are the good for age. I'm not like you mass starters. This is going to be great. And we were right next to the celebrities in a big tented enclosure, right at the good for age start. And all the good for age club runners are twitching like mad. Like, they're lining up and there's a guy who's been doing it for years, the marshal, and he's like, right, I know you're all keen club runners and you want to get going, but we're going to just open this gate here and let all the celebrities in front of you, and they're all going to get their nice photographs, and then they'll part the seas and they'll let you through. But if there's any elbowing or pushing or shoving by you boys trying to get through these celebrities, there'll be trouble. Like, and surely enough, they'll let all the celebrities in and they're all getting their photos taken, and then the gun goes and all these club runners in front of me just go like ballistic missiles straight through the middle of the celebrities that are holding their arms up going, oh my God, mm-hmm. and off you go into Greenwich. And yeah, it was a great marathon, but I totally screwed up the pacing, and I was about 10 minutes quicker in the first half than I was in the second half, just getting carried away, like bombing it to London Bridge and then suffering in Canary Wharf and getting round. So yeah, that was my first marathon, second marathon, sorry.
I've got a quick question. Can you remember any of the celebrities?
No, I can't actually. I was trying to think if that was the...
Make some up quick.
The Jay Goody days or something like that. There was some... I don't know, maybe that was maybe later than 2006, but there was just some randoms. Like there was Nell McAndrew, I think she was about at that time as well, but she was really good, obviously. She was around the three-hour mark, I think. Yeah, but there was loads of soap stars and people like that. They were just obviously just got the place and they were just cracking on with it. But it was quite funny.
They used to hear folk like Chris Evans and Richard Branson and all these dudes would be rocking up, eh? But that Nell McAndrew was a very good runner. Yeah, very good.
She still is, I think.
Anyway, never mind them. You're talking about tanking it to London Bridge and then struggling a wee bit at Canary Wharf. I can relate to that. Yeah.
Well, that's it. You just get carried away. It was great. Like you're able to run free because you're in the good free start. So there was no problem with running from the start. But yeah, you're just well, and it's a downhill start down into I can't remember what the bit of part of the Deptford or somewhere or into Charlton or somewhere you come into, and you're bombing down and then you're along the Thames. But yeah, it's a fast start, and I just got carried away. So it was 10 minutes quicker in the first half. Just really bad splits, but I think it was 2:53 or something like that.
2:53, so an RPB under your belt for your first two marathons, both under sub 3. So,
but very shite execution though.
I wish I was as shitely executed as that. But yeah, so that, I mean, you said that you did a few 10Ks and a few half marathons, and that was kind of coming out for the fitness and endurance that you had when you were in the Marines.
Hi.
Yeah.
Didn't really join any clubs or anything. We just did Greenwich 10K and a few other things like that. And I think maybe the New Forest half marathon and a few things like that. Yeah. But yeah, and then just tried to get into London for quite a good few years.
So was it like 2000? Was it around about that time, 05, 06, where you sort of started getting a wee bit more into it seriously?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, that was when once I did the marathons, I thought, yeah, I'm no bad at this. This will be quite good. The longer, the better. I'm not. Not as fast, not nearly as good at 10K and 5K, just not got the speed really. So I suppose that was my first inkling that the longer the better for me really.
Did you go back to London again after that? Or did you just do the one appearance?
Just the one appearance, aye. We lived in London I left the Marines in about 2000 and I was in London until about 2000. Yeah, end of 2006, we moved back to Scotland before eldest daughter started speaking Cockney.
Is that when you landed in Fife?
I landed in Fife in late 2000, and then it was races up here. So I think I did the Dunfermline half not long after getting up, and not sure what other races. Not a lot of races around then. Can't remember what else I did there.
Dunfermline half still exist?
Don't think so. No, that was a long time ago. Yeah. Aye. And. I can't remember what other races I did then about that time. Maybe that was when I started getting, I got into a triathlon phase after a while as well.
Ironman, half?
Half Ironman. My friend, my best mate, Rushy, he was into the UK Ironman scene. He was starting to do that and went to watch him a couple of times at Bolton, and he sort of press ganged me into trying it. And so I did a couple of years of that and got all the gear, and I thought, yeah, First triathlon, let's just do the half Ironman at Aberfeldy. I think it was about, we can't call it an Ironman, it was Scottish Middle Distance Triathlon Championships, however they called it then. Really good race, really well organised, but I am such a shite swimmer, it's embarrassing. I think I was like, passed out of the water, and then basically trying to get my fingers to work on the bike and playing a bit of catch up on the bike and a bit of catch up on the run. And it's good fun, like, but yeah, just atrocious at swimming, like.
So when, oh, sorry, John.
No.
Maybe we're going to ask the same question if we have had a snap moment. When did ultramarathon come onto your radar?
Ultramarathon came on. Well, the first one I did was in 2011 at the Fling, so it must have been the sort of year before that, or I was started to see people doing it or hear of people doing it, and it must have been the Fling I heard about in the West Highland Way races. Well, I remember years ago actually when I was in the Marines, probably late 90s, and we were walking the West Island Way for charity, and on the last day we were putting our uniforms and boots on, and we're doing it in 3 days and thinking this is amazing, we're doing this in 3 days, people walk it in 5 days. And we got through Kinlochleven, and somebody was saying, oh, the boys that were doing the race were through here last week, and we were like, what, 20 hours, 20 under 24 hours, bloody hell, we're shite, 3 days is nothing, like. And I thought, you hear about it, and I thought, right, I'll give this Fling. And yeah, that was my first in April 2011, I think.
That's when the seed gets planted. The spark is lit. The spark is lit. Absolutely fantastic. You obviously had fitness from the Marines, but between 2000 and up to 2011, did you work with a coach at all?
No, I didn't work with a coach at all in those times. No, it was just running. Wasn't that serious training, like just keeping fit and stuff. And well, I suppose the marathon was fairly serious. It was very regular training, like, and I had to be notebook, and I was counting my miles and stuff like that. But before the fancy watches and stuff came along, you know.
You still got that notebook?
I think I did. I was looking for it a while back there. I think I've still got a couple of sheets of it. Yeah, and it was just like 10 miles out on the Thames back, and there was just really time written next to it. No splits or anything, just like, so I'd have a basic stopwatch or whatever, you know.
Yeah, paper-based Strava.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
No, okay. No kudos.
No pressure.
Yeah, no Strava polis.
Exactly, man, exactly. So, if we can, I'm keen to speak about Run Recover. That's your company that you coach with, but... And we can do that, but have you had a coach? Do you have a coach just now?
No, I did look into getting a coach a few years back, and then the sort of knee problems came along. So then I was very inconsistent. So I thought, right, I'll know get a coach now because I won't be able to follow a plan, and I lost a lot of confidence in entering races and stuff because you weren't sure you're going to be able to make the start line and stuff like that. So I didn't want to add in coaching pressure or free of injury and really get into it. So I put that on the back burner and I haven't gone back to it. But yeah, at the time I researched quite a few and I contacted one, and I was going to go ahead with that. And then sort of knee problems came along, and that was a good few years of knee problems. I'm just coming out of the back off now, really, I suppose.
You want to say more about your knee problems?
First knee operation, 2017. I think that was off of the back of my first kind of winter West Highland Way unsupported thing. I think that was the end of 2016. Yeah, winter 2016, I think, December time, whenever you normally do it around Christmas, don't you? And so I did it unsupported West Highland Way, and that was off the back of 200 or 300 milers. Was it 2015? I think I did the first my West Highland Way. So that's only 95, obviously. And I think I did that was my first distance beyond Fling. And then the same year, I think I did Glencoe Skyline. And then I was looking back in my training diary, and I was looking at it and thinking, that's daft stuff now. Because now I would never think about doing something pretty hard 4 weeks afterwards or 5 weeks afterwards. I'd think, right, I need at least 8 weeks between something big and daft. And I did quite a few things then, and then this Sandstone 120, which is 120 miler down in Northumbria, wherever it was, about a month and a half after that, I did the winter West Hill. It wasn't long after that, injuries in January and February, and then there you go.
I was going to say, you maybe just missed it off by accident, but no, the month after the Glencoe Skyline, you also did the Glenmore 24-hour race as well.
All right.
Just to throw that in the mix as well. But so what was up with your knees? I think I know what was up with your knees, but were they torn? Were they bashed? What was happening?
It's just mega painful, and then you just go through the whole process of physio, strengthening, stuff like that. Steroid injection, that didn't work. Oh, let's have a wee scan of your knee. Oh, look, the cartilage is worn down to the bone almost. If you want to continue running, we'll need to tidy that up, or you can just stop running for a good while and then maybe start again, but it'll probably come back if you continue in this ultra running malarkey. So I got it tidied up in 2017. That was the left knee in September or something, 2017, and it's about 12 weeks recovery, but that's when you can start again, but then it takes a good while to come back.
This is really interesting, because a lot of people think that getting an injury to, well, obviously your ankles, your knees are big parts of what you're going to be using when you're running, but to have had it as serious as that and then come back and do what you're still doing, it just shows that you can recover, you can still compete, you can still be winning, which is awesome. No one to lose sight of, though, of that initial ultra marathon, that introduction to the ultra marathon, because on the DUV site, your list of races is like a what's what of Scottish ultras, man. You've pretty much done the whole shebang, have you not?
I've missed out quite a few, I think. Catran and a few others, Glen Lyon, stuff that I've not done, but yeah. Ah. The Speyside, did that a few times. That was an enjoyable race.
Lovely bit of the country up there. And then the D33's in there. Devil, the West Highland Way Fool, Speyside Way, Jedburgh. Yeah, you've been all over the place. Brilliant. And then you mentioned that. Can you speak about that Sandstone Way one? That's no one I've heard of before.
No, they stopped doing it. The year I did it, there was only like 30 people in it, and only about 10 or 15 finished, I think. Mike Graffin had done it the year before me. And that's when I became aware of it. And at the time, it was, you must have a fancy GPS navigation device because you'll get lost if you don't do it. I think they opened it up as a long-distance kind of cycling path, and it was meant to be obviously good for tourism and stuff like that. It's a really good place, like really good path, and I'd wrecked it and stuff on the bike. And, yeah, because I remember wrecking it on the bike because I was knackered from Glenmore 24 or whatever. So I went down to recce it and stuff because I knew you're going to be running mostly at night and it's going to be a nightmare. But it was a really good race. But it was small numbers and not many people finished. And that's probably the longest time I've been in my own. I think I was on my own from about 10 miles till the end.
Wow.
And it's November or whenever it was, so it was just a lot of darkness. I ended up about 4 or 5 hours ahead. It wasn't that competitive on that particular, pretty grim, like.
I didn't know where Sandstone Way was. I had to Google it. It's like,
yeah, it's North Berwick. North Berwick down to Hexham, I think it is.
Yeah.
Or Berwick down to Hexham. Yeah, Berwick on Tweed down to Hexham, I think.
We should throw in the fact that Neil was first finisher at that time. October 2016, did it in 23 hours, 20 minutes and 35 seconds.
Yeah, about 22 hours on my own with my own thoughts.
You go to some weird places, I bet.
Yeah, I think they stopped it. It was a good race, it was a good route, but yeah, I presume they just stopped it. They had a shorter race as well. It was the what's the name? Was it the Outlaws kind of running company?
A trail Outlaw. Yeah,
they were pretty good guys, it was well organised, but they just didn't get the numbers for the big one at the time, so I think they dropped it off their list of races.
You've got to wonder if we'd think about resurrecting that one, because there's a big appetite now, isn't there, for different, and the longer distances seem to be really, really popular. There's also a couple of appearances in there at the lakes. What was the appeal of the lakes?
I did the West Highland Way in 2015, so it was the lakes, the first one in 2016, I think.
Yes.
Was it? I must have just heard about that. I think it was, came on my radar or whatever, on Strava or whatever, and there was quite a few people doing it, and so I thought, let's have a shot at that, and then I've become rather addicted to it ever since.
Definitely made a few return visits.
Yeah.
Last weekend in July is one that's probably marked off in the calendar each and every year, I take it. And when you're not down there running, I'm assuming you're down there with some athletes, because I've seen you down there with some athletes.
Well, as I was saying to people, like, you know, I can be in Glencoe in 2.5 hours to 3 hours, and you can get down to Keswick in 2.5 to 3 hours, and you just bomb it down the motorway rather than getting stuck behind a lorry at the Tyne Drum or Crane Lark, you know, for half an hour.
That was a kind way to say camper van.
My camper van's no fast enough to overtake stuff.
Oh, I don't know. It's a well-kent vehicle, isn't it? Out on courses, and I remember when I was first starting doing ultras and stuff like that. I spotted your van tooting about and things like that. I'm like, who's this with his blue alloys?
I've changed the blue alloys now, but I've gone, it's even worse now. It's got a picture of me in the back now. How vain can you get?
I've got to say, when we arrived in Coniston in July this year, we were standing outside the sort of main marquee, and we looked across, oh, Neil's here, look, there's Neil's van, it sticks out a mile, it's brilliant, I love it.
It's brilliant, you need to get yourself out there, so absolutely good on you, that's exactly what you should be doing, being, even if it's no natural thing, Neil.
No, but the lake, well, the first time I went to the lake, I suppose the appeal originally was the, you know, you've got the West Elm Way and it's A to B, and then you look at the Lake District and there's all this massive circle and around the lakes, and it's just a very appealing route. And then when the first time you'd be down there, and they do a good thing where they've got all the organised recce runs, like, and so you get to know the route or whatever. And I think that first year again, that was another grim experience. I went down to recce the route in October, November, and I nearly camped, but thank God I didn't, because I did a very inefficient Coniston to Wasdale and back, so out and backs, recce's and just doing the same bit twice, and the first time I did it was absolutely lashing down, and I was like, thank God I decided to get a B&B in Coniston that time. I was just like never so glad I'd been in a hot shower that night. and then the next day driving to Wasdale and going out and back from Wasdale to Braithwaite, and it was even worse weather, and I was late back, I remember, I didn't have a signal on my phone, so the missus was nearly phoning the mountain rescue by the time I got out of the valley to get a phone signal. She wasn't pleased.
It is an infamous bad signal areas. Even, you know, you're like, you're in Keswick and you've got full signal or whatever, but then the majority of the Lake District, you're knackered.
Yeah, and it's always when you need it. Important phone call to make. Oh my God.
Sorry, John.
No, I was going to ask, we've had a number of people on that have done both the West Island Way and the Lake District or the Lakeland events. Would you say they're both very challenging. Would you say one is more challenging than the other, and which one would that be?
I suppose it depends on the runner and their strengths, but for me, the rest of the way has got hills and stuff, it's whatever, it's 14,000 feet, but it's still very runnable as per the times that people get. The record time, what was it, 13:14 or 13:41? I think 30, for the...
Yeah, Rob Sinclair, then, what was it? I'll check that.
I think it was 13:41 or something like that. Anyway, and then so the Lake District record or the Lakeland 100 record is like 19 something now, is it? 19:30 or something like that. But yeah, so I would say the Lakeland 100 is much more challenging because of the elevation. So it's 21,000 feet roughly, and obviously 10 more miles. So yeah, on paper, definitely harder. But yeah, and I suppose what you prefer or what you're good at, I just like the more hilly events, if you like, or more mountainous, so it's a bit more challenging, and it's a really nice route. And I suppose the West Island Way over the years is getting more manicured, and not that it gets faster, really, it is a proper motorway. Although the Lake District paths are very well worn as well. Like, but I would say it's definitely harder just because of that extra elevation, and you can see it on the times. I had a wee spreadsheet for a while there. It was helping me with clients, and I had a list of people who had done what their times had been. It's not exactly scientific. It was assuming they all had decent races. So they'd have their time. People like Marco Consani, that's Arabi's West Ham way time, and then his Lakeland time, and then about 10 other people, and then they'd have their pace for Lakeland and their pace for West Ham way, and what the difference of the average was coming out, like 2 minutes a mile difference or something, I can't remember. So then I'd be advising that to clients that were doing going from West Ham way to Lakeland and saying, this is on paper, if you're having the equally good race, this is the difference you can expect, so here's your projected time, assuming good training.
I am listening. This is okay. I have entered self-indulgent mode tonight.
Are you boys speaking. Got you boys got the you get the same perks as podium people, and you get a free entry next year.
And I'm doing the 100 next year. So
awesome! I'll see you there.
I will. Right, back to Rob Sinclair, 1341.
It was 1341. Check out my knowledge. Yeah,
there you go. Well done. Well
I'm
done.
Just working at John's. West Island way time, and I'm Neil, let's have a sweepy on John's 100 finish time.
We better tell Mark Lathwaite to extend the opening time to Tuesday, I think.
The race cut off.
I'm interested though, Neil, you jump right into the Lakeland 100 rather than do the 51st in 2016.
I was doing, I must have done 3 or 4 flings before then or around that time. So I think I'd done with the 50 distance and I did the West Ham way. So I thought, right, let's do the Lakeland 100. All right, that went not too bad. Let's just stay at, maybe I'm better. The longer it is, the better, the closer I'll get to the front sort of thing, you know.
Yeah. And that first outing on the Lakeland 100, finished 5th overall. That's a good return, isn't it? So
what was that? 5th, was it?
Yeah, finished 4th male, 5th overall, that first time, 22 hours and 7 minutes.
Yeah, that went pretty well, that one. I ran most of the race with Duncan Oakes, I think, for a good bit of it. And then we sort of separated near the end, and Beth Pascal was a half an hour ahead of me, I think, storming it. She's still got the record, is she, I think?
I think she does for the 100, yeah. And then, did that then begin a love affair with the lakes? I think you've been a regular ever since, have you?
Oh, it certainly did, yeah. It's just not just the course and the race, just the whole, that was the first year I went, it was still in the school, they didn't have the marquees and stuff, so I can pull my, I've been there longer than you, you weren't there then, but the school, it was just in the school, they didn't have these marquees back in the day, boys, you know, not this fancy stuff now, like, you know, and so, just the whole way they did it, you know, the briefing and just the organisation and all the checkpoints and stuff. And the fact that you could, I suppose the sort of big difference between it and the West Ham way for me is that you can just go and do it on your own. You don't need crew, you don't need anything. You can just go and do it. You give them one drop bag and there's 14 checkpoints and it's all on you sort of thing. Or not all on you, but you don't need to get pals to come and crew you and stuff like that. So there's a difference there as well. And I just liked it. Well, just really enjoyed the first experience and the whole camping on the field and the whole thing. Like,
yeah, right. Just to put clarity, you mentioned Beth Pascal in the course record for a female. It was 21:29:36 that Beth set in 2016, and it still stands as the female course record. Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, I lost sight of her at going down into Wasdale.
Right. Wow.
Didn't see her again.
Seen her at the prize giving.
Can I ask, this is John's self-indulgent question of the week. I've only ever been on the Dale Main to Coniston part of the West Island Way. And I've heard
the Lake District, he means.
Lake District, getting excited. But I have heard that the first half, the first 50 odd miles of it is far more challenging than the second. What would be your opinion on that, Neil?
I think most people say that, but it's pretty well split up, and it's probably because I think the 50 is 9,500 feet or something like that. So there's a decent amount of elevation in the second half as well. Like, you know, it's not all crap. It's not all in the first half, but it's the sudden start, you know, it's a good climb to start with, you know, you're straight into it, there's no warm-up, it's out of Coniston, up, 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 And right. It's up, down the whole way, like, you know. So, yeah, it's, if you don't, you can easily screw it up because, yeah, if you get, it's a long way, obviously, and if you put yourself out in the first half, there's a lot more climbing still to come in the second half, you know.
Yeah.
You've really got to spread your effort, like.
Yeah, and I suppose for, even for the faster runners, you're guaranteed you're going to be out at least one night, aren't you? Because you've got a 6 o'clock start in the evening, so you're going to be going through that first night up and over hilly terrain. Yeah, sorry, my brain's starting to think, what have I done?
Yeah, no, it's a great, and yeah, your 6 p.m. start, that's the first kind of time I've done that as well, the first time at Lakeland, and it was like, oh, this is interesting, like, how's it going to be running through the night straight off, and like, probably the same for most people, they're driving there in the morning to get to Lake District, so they're up from the morning before the start at 6 p.m, I know, but yeah, most times I've done it as well, it's been like always evening sunshine and you're heading out, it's quite a good experience, and then obviously it starts getting darker and darker, and then you're at Wasdale in the dark and bombing it along to wherever first light comes for you, depending how far along the course you are.
Bombing it.
Well, yeah, not bombing it. Oh. Holding back a little bit to get
moseying.
To the, at least I can still go and I'm not absolutely ruined.
It is, well, we've had the pleasure of seeing you race in the 100 and watching you, it's at the 6 o'clock start, you know, looking like you're running with intent from the start to know, laying down a bit of a marker.
Was that the year I was at the very front?
That was the year you were at the front. That was called last year. Yeah.
That photograph.
Yes. Looking.
Look at that, Egypt.
Looking like you're on a mission. Which you were on a mission. I mean, last year, you podiumed.
Almost definitely did.
It's just so many variables in that race because it's, you know, there's a lot of favourites rocking up and you think, oh, we'll be lucky to get in the top 10 this year. And then, like, I've been in the race a few times now and quite often, you know, there's just things go wrong. People have bad races. And I remember, what year was that? Not sure what year it was. But, yeah, you're coming to Dalmain and the guy who won the year before is practically burnt out, like, you know, nutrition or something's wrong with him, like, and then same, yeah, last year as well, you come into, I thought I was in like fifth or sixth position coming into the Dalmain, and then Marcus Gubat, whatever his name is sitting there with a silver blanket around him, and the guys, the marshals say, you boys are second and third, and we're like, what, where did the other guys go? And the other guys had gone wrong coming out of Blencarter or something, and I thought they were way ahead of us, and they came in after us, and it's just like, Jesus, just, you just don't know what's going to happen. If you can be in the mix, and I'll be forced, just all those variables that kick in. It's not always who's best trained or anything like, you know, it's just, there's so much that can go wrong. Or you need a lot of luck as well, you know, a decent bit of luck for everything to go right.
Yeah, well, that year, last year, in fact, let's speak about that, 2022, which was your last appearance in the 100. You finished second in 21 hours, 55 minutes. Really, really close to the lad who finished in third, who was 21 hours, 56 minutes. And I know you had a wee bit of a race with him doing the finishing straight. Is that fair to say?
No, that one guy I passed on the actual street going into the school. But no, I was dying last year. The opposite of this year where the 50 and had a strong finish last year, I was absolutely dying from Ambleside. I was on watermelon for about 20 miles, which is not the highest nutrition value.
Right, got you. Okay. I'm getting confused.
And, trying to remember his name. I know he was Emma Stewart's partner, but he was catching me. I didn't see him, but...
Chapman.
Yeah, you can see on the splits, just much faster than me in the last quarter. Like, you know, I was dying and he was finishing.
Right, so he was strong, bearing down on
you. Aye, but I didn't see him, like, but I didn't know it at the time, but yeah, I was just hanging on last year, and that's the way it goes sometimes. Like the boys in the 50 this year, they assume they were hanging on, and just when the fatigue gets you, everyone gets their fatigue at different times, and it can be quite critical or unlucky or lucky.
So that Lakeland 50 appearance this year, was that your first 50 appearance?
Yeah, that was the first 50. That was kind of snap decision last year, because I was absolutely ruined after the 100 last year, and I was thinking, not doing this pish again, it's absolutely mental.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I can't wait to do that.
And last year I went over my ankle about three times before Buttermere, and I didn't pull out at Buttermere, but it was like, oh, I might have to stop here, but it was okay. So I ran on in it, and then it was fine. But then I was out for about 6 weeks or 8 weeks after, and just had problems with my ankle since. Really, it comes and goes. I was just absolutely ruined last year. And I suppose you remember the last quarter, and you're absolutely dying. You can't eat, and I was just like, Christ, this is mental. This 100-mile malarkey. Maybe the 50 will be a wee jolly next year.
It turned out to be a happy wee jolly, with another intriguing finish, because I don't know what in terms of how the 50 panned out for you. At Tibberweight, were you in first at Tibberweight?
No, I was third at Tibberweight. Yep. Yeah.
Okay, and that's what, 4 miles to the finish. You were in third.
Aye, but I didn't know that at the time. I thought I was fifth or sixth. I wasn't quite sure. Lost count, and one guy, the leader dropped out at between Ambleside and Chapel Style, somebody said.
Okay.
Chris Steele, I think it was.
Right.
But again, I didn't know that. But yeah, I think he was leading. He was about 4 or 5 minutes anyway. And yeah, so yeah, I'd lost sight of the guy in front of me before Tibble Three. I saw him when I was going to the unmanned Dibber. He was going down the road fairly quick, Dan Thacker, and he'd passed me way before Ambleside. Then I went through Ambleside, and then he passed me again because he was being sick in Ambleside, apparently.
Okay.
And so he passed me again, and he went away, and I saw him going down the hill at the unmanned Dibber, and I thought, oh, I'm not going to catch him, maybe no. And I was settling into the negative mindset, oh, well, maybe I'll be the first 50-year-old. That'll be fine if I don't get in the podium.
Okay.
And I was looking for him at heading. I was thinking, if I can see him going out the Tilworth way, I'll maybe be able to get him, or maybe not. And I was looking away ahead, and I couldn't see him. There's a few people at the checkpoint, but I couldn't see him. So I got into there, and yeah, I was thinking, oh, that's it, they've gone, I'm not going to get them now. Ditched some gels and stuff there, and just got half a thing of Coke and went up the hill and put a bit of effort in. And then when you come up to the wee river crossing the tree, I was looking ahead, and there's a kind of gradual slope to the final descent, and there was two of them there, and one in the front had his poles out, and the other one was, they were both walking, and I was thinking they should probably be running that bit there. They must be kind of tired. Oh, maybe it's not just me, it's tired. You forget that, don't you?
So what did that spark in your brain, though, seeing them?
Well, yeah, it's just such a mega effect, isn't it? It just shows how bloody mentally weak you can be. So it makes such a difference when you can see them. I suppose it's not just seeing them, it's seeing them and then evaluating what you've got left, or maybe thinking, maybe I have got something left. I could see that they were walking, and I thought they should be running on that particular bit of ground. So I thought they must be buggered, as well. Let's have a wee more push on here. And then I looked up again, and Dan was in the brackens pulling his shorts up. And he came out onto the path and kind of waited there, and I ran up to him, and he was like, I'm absolutely buggered. I think he's kind of rough in front as well. You might get him. And I was like, right, great. And I ran on. And then he shouts at me when I'm running past. He goes, how far back is fourth? And I'm thinking, I was fourth. Maybe. And as usual, the brain's not working very well. And I was thinking, does that mean I'm in third or second? I'm like, Christ almighty, let's just catch this guy in front. Let's get one at a time here.
Wow. It must have been awesome coming down that fire track.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. You dropped a fairly fast mile down the fire track, I remember.
It's all downhill, man.
Aye, downhill with 48. Miles in your legs, but I remember speaking to you at the end, and I think you'd maybe just saved your activity on your watch, and it came up your fastest mile, and I'm assuming that was the mile that you just kind of whacked down at the end. It was like six.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 6.5 or something. But yeah, it's mega steep there. But yeah, it was just because, well, I got up to the guy in front and is it Trigwell, his name,
yeah.
I think? And
Robert.
And I was, brain was going overload. I was thinking, right, I'm getting to him. I'll get him at the top of the descent. And I was like, Christ, it's really narrow and technical. I'm going to go to my arse. I'm going to go to my arse. I'm going to screw up here. I'm going to smash her face into a rock. It's going to be a nightmare. And why would he let me past? And just all the stupid thoughts going on. And I get up behind him like, right, what do I do now? Do I say, come and past on your left? Why would he let me past? We're racing now. And then as I thought that, he went to the right around this kind of wee channel through the brackets to the left. So I bombed it through that channel, got in front of him, and then just kind of emptied myself and hoped he didn't have anything left and just bombed it down the thing and just really thinking I'm going to go in my arse here. Got onto the track and then just caned it down as much as I could, like, and looked back, couldn't see him, and just kept going. Yeah.
I was going to ask if you looked back.
Oh, I always got to look back.
Yeah.
Think they're going to get you. They're going to get you. They're saving. He's saving a bit. He's going to get me.
That was sensational. And also, I got the pleasure to see you kind of finish and come over the line and things like that. And I knew how elated you were. You could tell, quite rightly so, as well. Wondering what your almost like goal celebration was going to be. And you didn't disappoint when you came into the marquee.
Oh, shocker. That's Johnny's wife, Mariam, got that on video as well. I'm like, bloody hell, what the state of me there. I think it was just because it was only just before that I knew I'd won. Like, I didn't know, actually, like, I was that right, beat that guy, that's great, cross the finish line, first 50-year-old, yeah, beauty, surely. And they're like, I was just like having a total brain fart, and they're like, all right, first 50, and I'm like, yeah, 50-year-old, yeah, how many in front of me? And they're like, no, you're the first 50, and I'm like, yeah, 50-year-old, but how many guys under 50 in front of me? And they're like, were you in the 50-mile race? And I'm like, yeah, and they're like, you won. I'm like, oh, right. And they're just looking at me like, you're the thickest twat in the planet here. Like, how can you not know you've won? Maybe we should give them that feedback. You know, right, if you know who's coming, just stick a wee thing across so they know they've won, like.
Yeah, a tape.
Because you run across and there's like nothing. Like, they're waiting for you to lovely escort you in, and it's fantastic. Like, but you cross the timing mat, or there's no timing mat now. I think it's the just sensor, proximity sensor. So you're like cross the line, and you're like, yeah, I'm over the line. Like,
I see, Andy Berry in the 100 had exactly the same sensations, didn't he? You know, yeah. he was knackered, happy to be finished, and then he got told he had won.
Well, that's it. I suppose, especially if it's your first time doing the race and then you win, and maybe, I assume he's won other races, and yeah, he goes through the banner and holds it above his head. Yeah, I won. And they're like, what the hell's going on here?
I've got to say, you were very articulate in the tent when Stephen was talking to you. And I was thinking, there was obviously this, it was like speaking to your league footballer just after the final whistle. You know,
and
interesting analogy.
But you were standing there, totally with it, obviously buzzing, and getting that. It was absolutely fantastic to witness it. And got to say, I think Stephen described it as like a photo finish. There was 1:14. Now that sounds like quite a bit of time, but over 50 miles, that's nothing, is it? You know, it was absolutely brilliant. So. Massive credit to the three at the top three. You were 8:03:58, Robert Trigwell 8:05:12, and Dan Thacker, once he got his brakes up, was 8:08:45. That's amazing for the top three to come in.
Dan had seen the state of the Portaloos at the camp. He was playing his cards right.
He actually refused to shake my hand. He says, you're not wanting to shake that, mate. So
it was close, aye. It's funny. Aye. Well, that's it. You're exactly right. It's 30 seconds extra and a checkpoint a minute here. Like, because if I'd been another 2 minutes, or if they'd just got over that rise out of sight, that would have made a huge difference. I wouldn't have seen them. I would have got to the top of the hill. They'd have been halfway down the hill before I saw them, and then it would have been even closer. Or, you know, it's just so mad, the timing and how the fatigue hits you and stuff. And I've been in that position where you're struggling at the end and you think, I'm going to get caught, I've got no energy left, and you just can't do anything about it, you've got nothing left. But yeah, all the seconds do count. Like, and like, I didn't go into any And I spoke to people before about that and clients as well about checkpoint time. And I suppose when you're first starting out, you spend a lot more time in checkpoints. And especially in the Lakeland, if there's 14 checkpoints, if you're an extra 2 minutes in each of those, or some people are 10, 15 minutes and they're sitting down and changing everything, which they maybe they need to do or they feel like they need to do, and they'll obviously maybe cut that as they go on. Like, but it just makes such a difference, you know, how it can be critical if you're trying to get it.
Yeah, I do remember that myself when I first started in ultras, getting advice such like that, you know, basically, didn't hang about too long in the checkpoints, grab what you want and keep on walking, even just to keep on the move and keep getting a step closer to the finish line.
Yeah, yeah, well, it's interesting, I suppose. You think you can easily say, oh, you don't need to sit down and do that. And people say, oh, no, I definitely do. But then, I don't know, you could argue that, well, maybe you're running too fast then. If you need to have a 10-minute rest, maybe you should be more even or whatever. But at the time you think you need it, you sit down and you do whatever you need to do. People are changing shoes and feet and socks and stuff like that, and that's what they have to do. But yeah, if you're, especially like if you're trying to get your age group prize or something like that, afterwards you can, like you can see it can only be a minute or 30 seconds in it and you've missed it or whatever, and that was because you just did something at a checkpoint, you had an extra cup of soup.
On soup. How did you feel your Lakeland 50 this year, Neil? If you're wanting to share that, how did you feel it?
That's top secret, man. Can't you be giving stuff like
no
that
problem.
Away?
No problem.
My strategy is I didn't go into any checkpoints apart from the first person you see to get water from them. I didn't go in at all. Like, I just got water. And a bit, I've kind of fine-tuned over the years, and it was kind of tricky for me because I haven't done a fast 50 for quite a while. And I actually tried to ask nicely to go up to the 100 before this year, but I changed my mind. I had a decent block of training. I was thinking, I'll be shite at the 50. I should be back in the 100, like, you know. But I left it too late to ask to get upgraded, and so I was in the 50, and then I was thinking, started nerding out on the splits and stuff, and I was thinking, right, how the hell am I going to do a fast 50? I haven't done one for years. It's going to be horrific. And then I was looking, and it was kind of working out, it's like 3 minutes a mile faster for the 50 compared to the 100 for me. And I was thinking, that's a lot faster. I'm going to absolutely die. And then I was looking at all the results, and I was looking at people around the 8 hours mark, and they were getting to Howtown in an hour 20, which is like 7.5 minute miles. And I was thinking, bloody hell, this is going to be insane. Like, you know, and I was thinking the start's going to be horrific. It's just going to be so fast. And how am I going to hang on to that? So I generally start off with the time I'm aiming for and base that on either what I've done before or what people I think are around the same level as me, what they've done. And this year it was Rory Harris, who's been in the 100 a couple of times. He's won the 100 and I've raced against him a few times, and he's generally ahead of me. And he dropped to the 50 last year. And I think he was 8:15. So I was thinking, bloody hell, if Rory's 8:15, I'll be lucky to get near that, like, you know. And I was looking at the other splits, and Katie's splits, she was about eight hours two or something like that. So I was thinking, on a fantastically brilliant day, around the 8 hour mark, but more likely around Rory's time of 8:15 or something like that. So I put in, I was aiming for about, eventually I just put it for 8 hour splits, thinking, right, I'll slow a bit and it'll be around 8:10 to 8:15. But I'll try and stay on the splits as long as I can. In fact, I digress here. Back to nutrition is your original question. So I went for, I've got this kind of Basica carbohydrate drink that I heard, the 24-hour world champion geezer, apparently he used to use it, and it's like a 95% carb drink, two scoops, gives you 50 grams of carbs. So I was having 50 grams of carbs in a bottle, so I had AS chews, which are 45 grams of carbs in a wee 65 gram chew. So I was going to get like, about 90 an hour was the plan, knowing that I'd probably go off that. So I had, getting kind of nerdy and stuff in most recent races. So instead of carrying two bottles to Howtown, I think I'm going to be there in an hour and 20. I'm just going to carry one bottle and top up when I get there. So I'll have two to go to Mardale. So I'd have, 50 grams in the bottle, and then I'd have one chew and try and have that every hour. So that I end up about around 90 grams an hour. And then the end, I didn't have that. So I had eight of those chews and a load of little sachets of the pre-mixed powder. with 50 grams of carbs, and every second sachet I had a SIS, sorry, a PH1500 salt tab thing in it. So every second one I'd have one of those as my drink. And then occasionally I'd pick up Coke and whatever they had.
Yeah. What was the name of the drink? Basica, did you say?
Yeah, Basica. It's a carbohydrate drink. You can Google it, and it actually comes. You can't buy it in Britain. You need to get it from Germany or somewhere. And I was sending it to a client recently, and I Googled it again, and it comes up on a website under women's hair loss products.
Okay.
I've no idea why.
I thought your hair was looking right good.
Glossy. But yeah, you Google it, and it's in a couple of sort of health websites, and one of them is from Germany. There was another one. It was in that category, and I was thinking, why the hell is it in there? And it's like, that's the exact same bottle.
Oh,
so that's
it. Enough, eh?
A client ordered it there recently, and it's quite a kind of subtle taste, flavour, lemon flavour, but it's quite good. Highly recommended. Get it down.
It was giving you that amount of grams of carbs. Yeah. It's definitely worth investigating, isn't it?
Oh, I'm imagining John ordering it and like getting the wrong stuff at the wrong website, and he's got like a big mop of hair.
Turn up like Rod Stewart.
Sorry.
But, you know, it worked well. I didn't pick up any food at all. I just occasionally I'd have a think once instead of filling up some flat Coke at one place. And then in the last checkpoint, yeah, totally for no benefit at all, I came in and I was like, oh, at Tilbury, I said, oh, can you get those two chews out my back? And then they grabbed them and they started opening them and giving them to us. No, don't want them. Chuck them. Give them to charity. Give them to the next guy. That's like 100 grams of weight. I don't need that. like that would make a difference in the last 3 miles, like, you know.
Accumulation and marginal gains.
Well, you know what, though? What you've described there as well, though, Neil, you spoke before we started speaking about nutrition, it was about spending the least amount of time in checkpoints. You were missing checkpoints altogether. You were self-sufficient. Apart from getting top up with water, you were just water, on.
I didn't miss them. I got water at every one. The only one I missed, well, I didn't miss it. I was coming into Chapel Style, and the woman was outside the tent, and I was thinking, well, I don't need to go in there. I can just go past it because it's a proximity sensor somewhere near here. It'll be fine. And I says to her, do I need to go in there? And she said, yeah, you need to go in, but you can go straight through. And so I went in the tent, and there was people around, a few hundred people around, and then there was a channel straight through the middle, so I went straight through the middle and out the other side. And it was quite funny, actually, because my wife happened to be watching the live stream at the time, and she was like that watching. She went, oh, straight through the middle, must be in a hurry. And then the marshals by me like, who's that? Who went through the tent here?
Oh, brilliant. I love it.
So that was 20 seconds saved at least.
Definitely. Well, it counted in the end, really, didn't it? So it's been a good tactic. It's the polar opposite for what John does. But
he's a celebrity. He'll be getting table service when he rocks up next year.
Selfies and everything.
I get my money's worth.
But you did touch on something. You know, some people who are taking part to get to the finish line, know to get to the finish line in a certain time or at a certain tactic, so long as they're making the finish line. And for them, that 10 minute is their saviour to be able to, you know, recuperate and refuel and go on. So if you do spend 10 minutes in checkpoints, it's also all right.
Yeah, definitely. Horses for courses. Yeah, you have to do what's right for you. And obviously there's a lot of people doing it. Yeah, I want to finish this 100 mile. It's my first 100 mile. It's a mega hilly 100 mile. It's well regarded as a serious endurance challenge. So yeah, uh-huh. And that's how they'll plan out as well and think, right, I've got so many hours to run it. I'm going to spend 10 minutes in each checkpoint. I'll take that off my running time and I'll work it all out like that, yeah. and complete it successfully, which is great execution for them as well.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing your sort of nutrition strategy there. I know that people will be really interested in that and your approach to it. Would it be safe in saying that you quite like a statistic and a bit of a data geek when it comes to looking at splits? You've kind of referred to it a few times.
I spend an unhealthy amount of time on Strava and spreadsheets and previous race results, and sometimes for clients, but a lot of time for me.
Yeah, well,
it's just interesting. I think, well, it can be interesting, especially the Like race results are really good, especially when they've got all the splits of previous people, and you can see West Ham Way, for example, it's really good with the splits of all the, and you can see like people, some people finishing, I don't know, for example, two people finishing about 22 hours, but there's a difference of an hour then and an hour difference, and one person, like everyone talks about, oh, you were catching that guy, and generally you're not catching that guy, or that guy is slowing down and you're continuing on, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just the time is just the first thing, but there's a story behind everybody's time. Sometimes it's been paced very well, other times they've gone well in the first half, and but you, so you can see in the results, because a lot of them say what time, not just what time you're at the checkpoint, but what position you're at each checkpoint. So you can see the ones that have done it very well, they were like, I don't know, 150th at the first checkpoint, and they worked their way up to 20th or 30th at the last checkpoint, so they did it brilliantly. And yeah, other people have done the opposite, you know, gone out hard and gone backwards.
It's funny what I've, because I do quite like a scan down results and just looking at trends and things like that as well. Maybe knowing, transferring on to spreadsheets and making graphs and stuff like that. But you also notice that there's gluts of runners, eh? It's sort of gluts in terms of, you know, then there's a big gap, and it's, you can see where people are pairing up to help each other almost as well, becoming like forming little alliances almost to help, you know, whether it's moral support or company, because you spoke about being dead bored for 90% of a long race sometime, and sometimes it's actually just good day with a blather.
Yeah, yes, definitely. It's a natural thing. I think you tend to, and it takes your mind off it. You might not be even, like, I'm not a big chatty person when I'm running. Like, I prefer to be 5 metres behind a guy than running with them, chatting for 2 or 3 hours, and especially if we're racing or whatever. But no, I think it's natural for people to sort of come together, and then they'll just watch somebody's ankles in front of them and follow that pace, and it can take your mind off it, even if you're not chatting to them. Yeah, so definitely seen that in races, batches of people, and then there's a half-hour gap, and then another few people or whatever.
Yeah, and it's also worth saying then, when you are working out your race plan, you're doing it either looking at your former self in terms of your splits, or looking at somebody around about the same level as you, so that when you're doing your tactics for this race, you're taking that into account, and then you're, I'm assuming, thinking about that whilst you're racing. How aware or switched on are you to your race plan when you're in the depths?
Well, that's it. You can have a wee plan, and generally I have I had a wee piece of paper or a wee card thing with my splits, and it was 120. I knew the first one was 120 at Howtown, the second one was going to be like 3 hours at Mardale Head. But obviously, and I say that to all clients as well, this is your guide, this is your thing, but you must overrule it with your body and how you feel at the time. So don't continue, I missed that split by 1 minute, I'm going to hammer it to get the next split, no matter what, how fast it feels. If it feels too fast, I've got to make that split. No, your body overrules it at the time. You think, you just think, this is what I can sustain. I think I can sustain this for what's left, as opposed to got to hit that split. So you have your plan and a guide. And for me, I hit the first split bang on 121 or 120 at Howtown, got out of there, and I'm not looking at my watch that much. And then I got into Mardale Head, checked it, and I was on the split for 3 hours. So that was perfect. And then out of there. But then I didn't look at it after that. I just thought, right, I've hit the first two. Okay, we're on schedule. I'm going at the pace I can sustain. And actually, I overtook Rory Harris before Mardale Head, and I thought, this is probably a bit of a mistake. He's going to see me again, But I came out of Mardale one time, and I thought, right, let's not bother looking at the watch anymore. Let's just, this is fine. Let's just try and sustain it. And I had a wee bit of a lull, and that was when Dan Thacker passed me, I think, sometime maybe around Kentmere, before Kentmere, and. And I thought, do I go with them? And I think he actually said at the time, let's work together, let's go out of here up this hill. And I was like, nah, you're all right, I'll run by myself. Antisocial Neil. So I was hung back for them for a good bit, and then they went out of sight. And but I just felt, yeah, I could maybe go with them, but I was just thinking, nah, feels a wee bit too quick at the moment. So I just hung back at my own pace, and they worked out all right.
obviously a great result, great finish, great result. Do you, and just given what you've just said, good execution over the course?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Like usual, you, even when the rarity of winning a race, you just straight into overanalyzing it and you think, shut up, just you won it. Let's just go forward. Don't look back at that. What's the point of going over it? But no, yeah, it worked well for me, and the nutrition worked fine for a change. Usually I have some, well, it's been that long since I did a fast 50, so it was new, not new to me, but yeah, so I was, you can get away with a lot more in a 50 than you can get away with in a 100, like, you know, so you can hang on a bit more. I think it's just not as overwhelmingly exhausting, or you need to fuel a lot more in the 100. So it simplified it, just having what I needed. So I didn't need to go into any checkpoint, and I hit the first two splits. I thought, this is fine. It's going all right. I'm in the top five here. We'll see how this pans out, but it's pretty good. Yeah. And I was quick in all the checkpoints, and then, yeah. And after that Kentmere to Ambleside thing, I slowed a little bit. I thought, well, this is maybe it. I'm not able to hold on with the other guys at the moment, but we'll see how it goes. Like, so there's a bit of luck involved, definitely a bit of luck involved, that they were fatigued at the end, and I don't know what it was like for them in the middle or whatever, like, you know. So it's just when the fatigue hits you. So there's a wee bit of luck involved, definitely. But yeah, it went very well for me. Obviously I won, but I didn't have any real low points. I held back a little bit when I thought it was getting too tough or unsustainable, just a little bit. So I think some of my splits are, like, most of them were the fastest, like your PRs and stuff, because you haven't gone that fast in that course before. You've obviously been in the second half of the 100, but some of the recce runs and stuff as well. And then I was comparing them with other people and stuff. So there was a little bit of a lull, but I think I allowed that lull to happen. Like, I held back a bit because I thought, this is unsustainable. And if I hadn't held back with that, I probably would have been, I wouldn't have been able to catch Peel at the end. I wouldn't have had the energy left. So I probably, luckily, had the discipline to hold back a wee bit, just because I thought, right, I can't go any quicker at the moment. Let's just calm down a bit and keep going. But no, don't push on. Like,
that's a very smart decision, man.
Lucky, man, yeah. Lucky.
I don't know. Well, maybe a bit of both. Lucky man by the verbs playing in my head now. I'll go with that. That's cool. You've mentioned clients a few times. Do you mind if we speak about run recover?
Yes, crack on.
Well, you no, tell us, when did you start run recover, and what was the thinking behind it? Who were you hoping to attract?
What was I doing? I was packing. I was getting fed up with my job in the bank, and I was thinking, right, what can I do? And I was in the running club here, and I thought, right, maybe I could do my coaching qualifications, and then alongside that, I'll do massage. So I'll train people to run loads, get them injured, and then massage them and fix them, and that'll be that's a great business model. And it was 2016, from the end of 2015. So I think I did, packed in the job, and then did my massage course over the winter, and I was did the jog leader before that, and then the coaching running fitness one after that, and so got them, and then started out just sort of helping one or two people for free, and then sort of and it was all spreadsheets and PDF documents and stuff then, and then just sort of built it, and just I'm a lazy bugger when it comes to social media and advertising and influence or whatever that's, and it's just word of mouth really, and it's just got around a bit over the years, and just gone with that, and then switched over onto the Final Surge sort of coaching platform that helped a lot over a few years ago, and a bit more professional, and just got the massage going, and this little treatment room I'm sitting in at the moment, and the extension on the side of the house, so that works well, and it's just really flexible for the, my wife works full time, so I'm doing the coaching and the massage, but it's really flexible for when the kids are going to school and appointments and things like that, so I do most of that, and while my wife works full time, and then I can just work around, and obviously the coaching's online and monthly phone calls with clients, and just not a lot of one-to-one work, but yeah, just coaching online, speaking to them once a month, and occasionally going training with them and stuff like that. So it works quite well, and I have around about 20 clients on the go generally. I don't really like to go much more than that, because it's quite easy to lose track, even with the software. I don't want to be one of those people that's like, oh, you were racing this weekend, I didn't notice that. What race have you got next? And that's why I do the phone call thing as well, because like, you can do it all on software and just do comments and stuff all the time. But I think that it's just like any sort of good relationship. It's the communication, like, you know, it's a touching base with them every month. It's kind of old fashioned, I suppose, spending time on the phone with them. But it's just, you get to know the person much better, and you develop the relationship better, and feedback and work together better. But no, so it's worked really well. I really enjoy it. And seeing people achieve their goals and stuff, and just getting right into obsessive nerdy running stuff like me.
I wouldn't say, sorry, Stephen, go, you go.
No, I was going to say, for your coach's perspective, you know, we spoke a lot about you and your racing and your personal successes. From a coaching perspective, what's your proudest moment? Is there one that stands out?
Yeah, I wouldn't like to single anyone out really, but yeah, it's just the buzz, yeah, when they basically come back to you and say, oh, it was brilliant, that really, really enjoyed that. Or not always in races, sometimes it's just when they notice. It's like you can say to them, oh, look, there's your stats, that shows this is better and that shows that's better. But it's much better if it comes from them. They identify it themselves and they're like 10-mile hilly time trial or something like that. And it's not always time, you know, it's a better heart rate, or they just recover quicker, or they start to notice, oh, when I've been running my local route, I used to stop at this tree and start walking from there, and now I stop further up or whatever, and they notice the improvement. And that's, yep, you know, that's the best kind of confidence boost they get, and that's the kind of the good stuff when they notice it themselves.
Can I just say just a wee thing? You mentioned about a phone call being old-fashioned. The value in that is unbelievable, man. Seriously, it is that I suppose it's that rapport, it's that relationship between a coach and an athlete, and the buzz you must get, because I'm assuming you'll work with a range of athletes across all different disciplines and doing all different stuff. So the rewards that will come back from the athletes, and it's that progress they're making. It's not always about landing on a podium, is it? You know what
no,
I mean?
No, definitely not. No, that's the minority that are aiming for that. But yeah, the majority of people I work with are ultra athletes, I suppose, because that's how they know me or they hear about me. And but yeah, I've worked with a few people doing marathons and some people from total beginner stuff. But yeah, majority ultra stuff. But no, yeah, it doesn't matter what level you're at. It's the improvement is the goal for them. So any improvement is great improvement. And especially if they're like, oh, this is amazing, I never thought I could do this sort of thing, you know, especially beginners. Like the beginners get the bigger gains, you know, they're just by running more, they get better and they really notice the improvement quickly. Just by.
Have you any slots available? How do folk get in touch with you?
Yeah, I've got slots at the moment. It's just runrecover.co.uk is the website, and I don't have any specific Run Recover social. I'm on Facebook and that, but I don't have my own sort of, it's just my personal Instagram and stuff like that, Neil McNichol. But yeah, just most people contact me through the website and just an inquiry, and then we get going from there.
So we can link that up in the show notes as well if people are looking for it. So we'll do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we'll do that. No problem.
Okay, John, where are we on our extensive question set that I referred to at the start?
I think we're on question two.
We've
asked two of the questions, I think, but we'll come back to you. But now, one of the things, though, and this is a question that I absolutely love, and I think other listeners love it as well. A favourite bit of kit, running kit, and we've mentioned that you've done, for want of a better technical term, a heap of ultra marathon, right? But is there a bit of kit that you've had with you, maybe different versions of it over the years? What's the one thing that Neil McNichol always has with him on your running adventures?
Oh, this one was quite tricky, actually, because I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, well, I don't actually have something that I must essentially have with me all the time, but there was a brand or a kind of kit. It all started in the military, actually. There was this bit of kit called the Buffalo Jacket, and it was the best, Gucciest, amazing bit of kit at the time when we had it, and you weren't allowed to wear it. When you're going through training, you've got to wear issue kit all the time, and then eventually when you're getting to the end of training, the commando phase of training, you can start using some of your own kit, and everybody's buying the gear from outdoor shops. And there was this buffalo jacket that people had, and it was like, it's just amazing. Pertex thing, it's not that amazing now, I suppose, but at the time it was just the best bit of warm kit you could get, and you had to wear it next to your skin, so it had to be like really tight, and then sort of semi-waterproof outer layer and a really sort of pile layer. And I think at the time, or they used to advertise it or whatever, that like a guy used to put the whole suit on and he'd jump into Lake Windermere and then get out and start walking, and it'd be like dry in 15 minutes, like. And it was an amazing bit of kit in the military, and it was your warmer's kit for keeping you warm. You'd do all your stuff and then put that on and you'd be warm really quickly. And then so getting into running, I've used loads of kit, but then I didn't, at that time I didn't know about the mittens. So then the buffalo mittens came along, and I only found out about them so many years ago, and they're the best bit of kit ever as well. Like, I didn't used to have any problems with my hands being cold. I don't know if it's an old age thing or poorer circulation in your hands. You know, you get people with Raynaud's and they really suffer. I never had that, and I used to be fine. And then 4 or 5 years ago, I used to start getting like quite cold hands and stuff. And I was like, right, and you go through tons of different pairs of gloves. And then I came across the buffalo mittens, and man alive, they are the best bit of warm gloves ever. Like, they're not the most practical, but Jesus Christ, they're really good for warmth, like, you know. Because it's like there's been a couple of times, like, in fact, that time once, one of those Lakeland recces I did by myself from Wasdale to Braithwaite and back, it's just the dumbest thing ever. Like, you have all the kit in your pack and it's pissing down, you think, right, I'll put my jacket on in 10 minutes, put my jacket on, and it's really heavy. And I got to Buttermere, soaked to the arse, and I'm standing outside this cafe at Buttermere, changing my kit and putting my jacket on and changing the sheet on the map because it's blowing a hoolie, and I'm thinking, I'm going up through the glen out of Buttermere to get to Braithwaite. I won't be able to change the map up there. I'll do it there. And already my hands are starting to do that claw thing, and I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. You should have put these things on 10 minutes, 15 minutes ago. And then I'm standing looking at the cafe, and I'm thinking, you are the biggest dick ever. Just get in the cafe and have a cup of tea. So that's what I did. I warmed up and then did that and cracked the run and that, but I was a wee bit behind time later on. But yeah, it was just the daftest thing ever, not putting the kit on that you have on. And then after that, I got the buffalo gloves, and generally if it's from autumn to winter, they go in the pack, and they're just a lifesaver for when the conditions get cold.
I've never heard the buffalo mittens. Could be on my Christmas wish list this year.
Yeah, they're more modern now. You get the belay jacket, and it's just a really light. Climbers wear it a lot as well for belaying and stuff like that. It's really good kit.
Yeah, it's a British company.
Yeah.
It was kind of like Rab, eh? Do you know, and sort of maybe even a similar part of the world. I can picture it. It's like they do a lot over the head jacket.
It's a smock.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, because I was going to get a new version of the jacket, because I've got the old jacket and it's tiny, it looks ridiculous now. And then I got the kind of modern version of it, is the Montane Extreme Smock, and that's like a roasting hot smock thing you put on, and it's got really thick pile as well. But it's a much bigger, bulkier version. You can't really chuck it in your bag for running, like, you know. The Buffalo is a wee bit smaller, and it was just a great bit of kit in the military. And so the mittens have moved on there, and I've used them for winter running or whatever.
Stick them in my basket then. Oh, maybe on my Christmas list, actually, looking at that.
But yeah, because I was thinking about other kit and the vests and stuff like that. Like, obviously, get the Ultimate Direction kit from Beta Guys, and that's really good kit as well. But no particular thing that I would have. Like, I don't know what examples you've had before of things that somebody takes on every run then or whatever.
For somebody, it's a pair of shoes, somebody else, it's a pair of buffalo mitts.
yeah, definitely. And it's just interesting that some people prefer a certain type of race vest. I think last week Rachel Norman says she likes to wear a La Sportiva hat. That was her thing. It varies. It's just interesting. I wear my big knacks. That's my favourite bit of kit. There you go. Exclusive. Right, we'll move on.
Oversharing.
TMI.
Right, we've spoke about some of the magical stuff that you've done and some fantastic results that you've had, Neil. What's coming up next?
Next is Finally, a Bob Graham.
Woohoo! Okay, let's talk about that. First
Turn on
of all,
the Bob Graham music. If there is any.
We'll make some up.
Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, explain what a Bob Graham is for those that don't know, please, Neil.
Bob Graham is one of the classic rounds in the UK, very famous. So the Lake District Round, 42 peaks, 65 miles, 27,000 feet. A loop from Keswick back to Keswick around all those tops, Helvellyn Ridge and Scafell and all that.
So are we going to see a Neil McNichol pose at Moot Hall?
That's where the photo is, yeah, the start and finish, yeah.
Brilliant.
And, yeah, I've done some of the, a lot of the training routes and legs and stuff over the years, but it's just never got around to doing it. I helped Johnny Kilpatrick do it earlier this year, and it was a great experience. Seeing him train for it and doing the recce and stuff, and then just being involved on the day. I did a leg four with him, and then he's actually been bullying me to do it. I think he wants, because obviously when you help people out, they'll help you out. So I think he wants to get that off his list. I need to help that bugger McNichol at some time. So let's get him just to do it this year, get it cracked off the list. So generally you do it, you know, when there's the most daylight in May, June, July time, and I'm cracking it at the end of this month. So there's a few more extra hours of darkness, but it'll not be too bad.
Okay, so end this a couple of weeks' time then, Neil?
Yeah, that's the plan. If my a wee bit problem with my Achilles and lower calf at the moment, so I'm kind of maintaining and hanging in there as opposed to improving or training hard, so just so I can make it and get it cracked without going...
Is that shockwave therapy is needed?
I had a wee bit of that, aye.
Is that a result of your Lakeland 50?
I had a wee bit of bother earlier this year, March time, something like that, and I had the shockwave then, and doing all the calf raises and all the rehab and that sort of sorted it out. And typically, as usual, once it gets sorted out, you think, yeah, I'm running again, this is good. Yeah, do I continue that rehab? No, let's just chuck that out the window now and crack on, we're fine. And then it comes back later on.
Yeah.
Good to hear that you do that, too.
Yeah.
That's vindicating me doing that. But it's not the right thing to do.
It's not too bad. I'm fairly confident be fine, but I'll probably be in maybe a few weeks off afterwards. I'm not sure.
So,
but yeah.
Logistically, though, pulling all that together, how do you do that? How do you get the people who are going to run with you and to do a Bob Graham, because it's a massive challenge.
Yeah, well, traditionally it's the Bob Graham Club, and if you want to be in the club, you have to have it witnessed on every top, and you register it before you do it, and then you supply, or presume the Strava or whatever, and the witness statements, and they've seen you on every top, and you give the splits for every hill that you hit, and then they take it and they say, right, you're in the club now, and there's however many thousand people are in the club, and they used to have a kind of annual general meeting every year in some hotel in Cumbria, I believe, and give out the certificates of the ones who did it that year. But now you can do it that way, very official. A lot of people just crack it, and if they've got people to witness it and they bother registering, they can get in. But some people don't bother with that, and they'll just run it with pals helping them, and they're not. It's technically unofficial, I suppose, but they know they've done it themselves. They've got the Strava and all that. So you can do it either way, but yeah, it's a massive challenge, and it's just, well, it's very well known, and there's people do the three of them. Obviously, you've got the Ramsey round in Scotland, and then the Paddy Buckley down in Wales, and another one in Ireland, I think. I'm not sure the name of that one.
How long has this been in your mind to do the Bob Graham?
Well, I've known about it for years, but yeah, 4 or 5 years, and then it just never getting around to it. And then it's like you have your race schedule or something as well, and so it kind of interrupts. You need to make a bit of space for it and stuff. And so, yeah, I just never got around to it. Really didn't focus enough on it. I was thinking about trying to avoid it. I want to do it then in case it's too risky and it'll knock me out for the race coming up 2 months after it and stuff. I've been quite a bit of risk averse since the knee operations and stuff. So, yeah, leaving plenty of space between events. And so, yeah, now's as good a time as any to just get it off the list successfully, hopefully.
Fantastic. It sounds like there's been a bit of a desire there. It must be really exciting to be thinking a couple of weeks' time you're going to be taking it on. Brilliant.
Yeah. It's great to get focused on it. And yeah, and you were asking about how you do it as well. Yeah, there's a Facebook group and stuff like that. So you can go on and people, there's a tradition of helping people out and then you help them out. So people will ask, oh, I'm doing it on this day. Can anyone do the navigation for me? And people will come off the group and or out of the group and say, yeah, I'll do that for you. And then you generally help someone else out. But yeah, I'm just sort of doing it through friends that I know. And so I'm not doing it through the Facebook group anymore. I'm just doing it with people I know that are to help out. And we'll get it worked out, the logistics, and do the sort of the relays and pickups and drop-offs and start the 24-hour process.
I can imagine there'll be a wee schedule already on a spreadsheet someplace with the proposed splits, etc., etc.
Well, that's it. The website kind of makes it easy for you. You can put in on the Bob Graham website, you can put in a sort of target time, and they've got, there's a guy, somebody who's worked out already, and it'll give you your splits for each section, each top.
Oh, okay.
It's quite interesting. It's quite accurate as well. And so it helps you out with that as a good guide, and depending, like, obviously you have to kind of work out. Obviously you can, like, everybody wants to do under 24 hours. That's the minimum. If you're in the club, you need to be under 24 hours. So generally people aim for 23 and a half or 23 or something to give themselves a bit of leeway just to safely get in the club. And obviously if you think you're capable of faster or something, then you, based on, again, on what you think you can do, you come up with a schedule and try and stick to it and not go too ahead at the start and end up dying at the end. Because I think, on this right, I think they say only one out of three people actually do it the first time. So there's a lot of DNFs and things go wrong, and obviously the weather, that might be a problem for me as well. Because when you plan it in as well, you put the date in and stuff, and then you know people drop out, or it's going to be horrific weather, so you either have to cancel or you just go ahead. You know, that could be a problem for me, but we'll see. I've got flexibility off the Friday night or the Saturday night. Hopefully we can get it cracked on the Friday night and chill out on the Saturday.
Do you have to do the tops in a certain order? Is that up to you, as long as you hit the tops of them all?
In a certain order, yeah. You're either going clockwise or anti-clockwise, generally.
What are you doing?
Most people go clockwise, yeah. So, yeah, you follow the route and just hit them all in order. And
you can probably tell you've piqued our interest here. we're very into it. So
the calculator thing's dead good, actually. You can play about with that for a good wee while. The amount of variables and things like that you can put in, like, you know, terrain, weighting, and percentages on weather and darkness and things. So I've never come across that before.
I know. When Johnny was doing his and he sent the splits across, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, just kind of lays it all out for you. And it's really good. And then you can use it to go and recce, and you think, right, Johnny did the same, right? Here's the time for the first leg, let's have a shot at it. And obviously you go too quick. There's hardly any chat running up the hill thinking, this is far too quick, and then it's 10 minutes ahead of schedule. So then I did exactly the same there the other week. There, me and my mate went down, right, let's do some leg two at pace. And we were 14 minutes ahead of schedule on the first hill, like, hardly spoke, going up the hill, we were pecking that much. Like,
rein it back a bit.
We'll rein it back a bit on the day.
That's brilliant, this website. It's also got like the weather prediction for the next week as well. And it says at the bottom, 2,713 members at the end of 2022. That's not a lot of folk on the planet to have done the Bob Graham round, is it? I'm excited. I'm excited about
tough.
This.
Yeah, it's definitely tough as per the one out of three that do it the first time or whatever.
Yeah.
That American boy who came and ran it with the record was Tap Off. How do you manage that?
Tap Off, yeah, that was insane. He was He was dropping his pacers, and his pacers are like the fastest boys in the Lake District.
All the top guys, and he's just running away from them with his tap off, looking like an Adonis.
And he was unbelievable. Well, he did the Tranters before that, didn't he? Came over, bought a camper van, pitched himself in Fort William, and just hammered the routes for like 2 or 3 weeks and all the splits of Finlay before that, and then just cracked it.
Brilliant.
Did his research, like he did the same in the lakes, got the camper van down there, did all the routes and stuff, and really hammered it, this research and pacing, and just absolutely destroyed it. Like,
got on the Strava segments. when somebody, right, because Neil, where I live in Ochterard, there's a couple of big hotels nearby, and there's a lot of visitors coming to these hotels, and sometimes they come from the States or whatever, like. And sometimes a handy runner appears, and you're like, bastard. I had that sprint to the pub for fucking ages, and now this Zach or whoever's come over and, for a week, and he's bloody went and done about a 4:55 mile in my own segment. Sorry, I'm not bitter.
I read that once, and what you need to do is you set up a segment that starts in your garden so nobody can ever take it.
Well, I've got a boy running in my garden daily trying to get mine. Setting up trip wires and everything.
Surely you do the same when you go on holiday. You have a wee look at the segments before you go, right, what can I pick up on holiday? Strava wankery, is it not called?
Absolutely. There's a whole Twitter, sorry, X account devoted just to that topic. So yeah, it is the case. Then you find that a funny name segment that kind of attracts you, whether it's like, you know, Jakey's Alley or something like that. And you're like, oh, what's doing there? Going here, we look at that. Anyway, I digress. I'm just thinking of this boy coming over to steal all the segments in the Lake District in the same way that I go to Tom and Alinos and steal all the segments in the prom, or not, as it may be. So, Saturday, that weekend, 28th, 29th September.
God, this is too public now, man.
Listen,
pressure's building.
We can cut this whole last 5 minutes out if you want, but we win it.
Burnley though.
end of the month. It's a full moon apparently if there's no clouds.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at the long range weather forecast and there's no clouds. So you'll not even need a head torch. You'll be fine. Oh,
I'll have a tracker for you. You can follow it. Stay up late.
Oh, brilliant. Next question. We've got a tracker.
Oh, I've got it hard. Be getting sent to me on the Thursday. I'll have it and switch her on. All systems go. No hiding. I'll
share that. And yeah, it's completely, the contract has been made with our throngs of listeners now, Neil. So you've got them egging you on. No pressure, egging you on. And that's a powerful thing.
They can fire their top tips into me, be like.
Oh, can't wait to see how that pans out.
No, it'll be good. Good to get it done. Or give it a shot anyway.
And last question on it. You spoke about your nutrition for something like a 50. For doing something that's longer, do you move into real food?
The Lakeland 100, yeah, you can't, well, maybe some people can do gels for the whole lot, but it's obviously you only get one drop bag in the 100, so you could end up carrying quite a bit on your own. So yeah, no, when I need to go for foods and stuff, yeah, I'll have... At Lakeland, if you're doing it next year, John, the rice pudding at Braithwaite, a cracker.
Oh, that's it, man.
And I think they do hot dogs at Buttermere as well. I didn't think I've had them, like, but there's plenty of choice, like, but yeah, I'm not great with the normal food, but yeah, like, you have to give it a go and get it, eat early as often as you can, because you're going to be struggling at the end of it.
I'll go in that checkpoint and say, Neil McNicholson, I've got to give it a go. Bring it on. Give me three of your finest hot dogs. So,
just for everybody's benefit, John did a wee sort of celebratory dance there at the prospect of rice pudding and hot dogs.
My
the length you'll
changed.
Go to for 100 miles. Eh?
They've got an extensive spread there. There's a few checkpoints. They've got the hot stuff. Obviously, you're soup at Mardale. That was good 1 year when it had to help hold the tent down one time. It was getting a bit blowy there.
Ah, see? Yeah, it's all part of the journey. All part of the journey. And I'll partake in the journey. Make it the very best journey there is possible.
Yeah.
Oh, bro, this has been great, eh?
It's been brilliant, but you know what? We've got a couple of questions left, and Neil certainly spoke about what he's shared with us. He's well travelled, Stephen, so you know what that means.
It means that he's going to come up with at least one cracker for the dialect dictionary. West Coast, Fife, have been the two top places that I've heard mentioned amongst some other lower down the sort of scale places. So over to you, Neil, for an entry submission into the Young Hearts Run Free Dialect Dictionary. The page is open.
Well, yeah, I thought about this and I thought you probably had this one before. Glaikit.
It's Glaikit. John often looks Glaikit, but I didn't kind of anybody's actually submitted it officially.
You must have, surely.
Well, anyway, let's pretend we have. We definitely have.
No, that's it. That's all I've got.
Oh, you're Glaikit buggers. Fifers have I got plenty of words.
I'm a plastic fifer. I'm imported.
A plastic fifer.
West Coast, the best coast, you know. Jeez-o.
Oh, Denny, yeah. you'll start a riot, man. You can't be saying things like that.
You lose half your clients.
Well, Glaikit's a good one. That was me at the end of the 50. Did you win the 50? Don't know, you're Glaikit bastard.
I was trying to bum you up, saying you were looking brawn, you were articulate, and you're calling yourself Glaikit. Brilliant.
You were just looking, you had this big Glaikit look in your face, you were going, where's all the young guns, eh? Where's all the young guns?
Aye, brilliant.
they had an off day. Well, was that you, or who was it? Oh, Neil McNichol, the oldest finisher. Oh, thanks for that introduction.
That wasn't me.
The oldest winner. Was that Adrian Stott, or was that just, I don't know who that was. It was funny, the oldest 50. I was thinking, oh, right, the 100, who's the oldest finisher of the... Or not the finisher, it's the winner. I think it might have been Ultra Stew from years ago.
Ultra Stew from years ago. But it is, you know, at the end of the day, you've won the Lakeland 50 as a vet 50. And was that the first time that's happened?
I don't know, but that's the thing. You don't get the vet 50. They give it to the next guy when you get podium privileges. So I'm yet to get a 50 prize. Been robbed.
Only because you're still winning the senior category prizes. That's a no bad problem to have.
It's a tough life.
I was going to ask as well. You mentioned about your knees and I referred then to you. You said you got your knee fixed. You got it looked at and fixed, and you've then come back and had a fantastic result at the end of July. How well are your knees now?
The knees are no bad. It comes and goes. The left knee was done in 2017, and then the same thing happened to the right knee in 2021. When did I miss it? Yeah, I missed it. I saw you boys at Lakeland 21. I was supporting.
Yeah.
You were doing the 50, and I cycled to Dalmain to watch the start of the 50 and cycled back because I wasn't running that year. That was recovery from
surgery.
So the right knee had the same problem, basically the cartilage in the back of the patella had worn down, but I recognised it quicker this time because I knew it was exactly the same, so I didn't bother with the 6 months of physio and a steroid injection. I went straight to the scan. It was the same problem and got that fixed. So yeah, they come and go. Wee bit of pain now and again, but doing various exercises when it comes, and walking backwards on the treadmill is a good one for me at the moment for fixing the knee pain.
There you go. Michael Jackson.
You got to check out the knees over toes guy on YouTube. He coaches basketball players to rehab their kneecaps and stuff like that. He's quite a quirky guy, and he's got loads of wee exercises and things for rehabbing your knees and lots of tibialis anterior muscle exercises and your shin muscles and stuff. It's quite interesting. But yeah, the treadmill one's a really funny one. It's like, it's not even switched on. You're just pushing it away from you.
Ah, just so the tension at the treadmill, yeah. You're pushing it away.
And you can do it obviously, like with, you know, tie a weight to your waist and you walk backwards with a weight sort of thing. And it's just doing your quads like that.
Dishing out golden nuggets to the very end here. I was going to be going down the route of saying that you've had these issues with your knees, but you've come back and finishing first in the late 50s. So for those people out there who maybe have got issues with ankles, knees, go and get it looked at. You know, it doesn't mean it's the end of your running. Get stuff looked at, recover. Or sorry, I should say, run, recover.
Yeah, baby.
And go again.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's it. You think, and I was thought about that one time before when I was sat at the West Helen Way presentation. I hadn't ran the race that year, but I was at the presentation and they were doing the names, and one guy who, he wasn't the oldest, but he was one of the faster old guys who was 72 and he'd done under 24 hours, and I was thinking, why am I worried about my kneecaps at age 49 when you've got another 20 years to go? You know, if you're out for 6 months, you know, it's not at the time it's the end of the world, but in the scheme of things, you know, you hopefully have plenty of time left to continue your running, you know, so patience is a virtue. But yeah, it's so frustrating when you have these injuries and you can't, well, till you get the diagnosis or you find out what's wrong. But yeah, I suppose it's when you're out for 6 months or a year, it seems like a long time, but then if you can still get another 10 years after that, it's not the end of the world.
I think the key is doing something about it rather than sitting wallowing in it. Go and get advice on it, go and get it looked at, and then you can plan your recovery. Yeah.
But that's okay. It's a struggle for some people waiting on the NHS or something. Like the first time I got the knee myself, it was $5,000 for my left knee. But the second time I managed to get it in the wife's private healthcare, so that was rather fortunate.
Okay.
So it's averaged out to $2,500 a knee.
Well worth it.
Cheap at half the price, as they say.
And I've got two final questions. One's a biggie. This is a biggie as well, though. Where is your Lakeland 50 winner's trophy?
Oh, man, I can show you.
Is it on display?
Do you see them there?
Do you see them? Brilliant. As long as you show me the one. There's a shelf full of them, man. Brilliant. I love it. Absolutely love it.
There's a gap there.
Well, maybe fix that soon. That must be great, though, if you're giving for your clients, if they're lying on that treatment table, getting a massage, looking up, going, oh, look at that, man. Brilliant. Talk about inspirational. I love it.
I just chucked them up there. I had a load of other wee medals and things, but they all got chucked in a box for COVID to keep the place tidy. And then I only took out the big bits of slate in the West Helen Way one for next to the master certificates for something to look at when you're getting your quads battered.
it's like the Ballon d'Or, if you know what the Ballon d'Or is.
Aye.
The football.
Yeah, the best football in the world. The best. Yeah. We were speaking last week about ultra running football chants, Neil. So John's come up with one for you. John, take us away.
Fuck off.
Oh man, I just wanted to put him on the spot. Ultra running football chant.
Well, so if he's running next year, you'll need to chant it to us when we're leaving Coniston. And you're not running, Stephen, next year or what?
No, I'm not running. My duties are bigger and more important than running. I'm fucking man. I'm fucking running the show.
Didn't he start swearing? Because I swore. Stop that. I ain't cutting this
out. I thought I'd be worse at swearing tonight. This is great.
Shimmy on over, Mark. Your boy is here. No, I'm not running next year. That's a simple, straightforward question answered. So, yeah, John, you've got a final question.
Yes, the final question is, we are now on Le Buff Buff Collection Volume 6.
Are we?
For our listeners. Yes, we are. It's an eclectic mix, the whole load of volumes that have been put together, Neil. What song would Neil McNichol like to share with the Young Hearts Run Free listeners?
Well, you mentioned it earlier, Lucky Man by The Verve.
Oh,
because when I've been miserable of injuries in the past and stuff, and you just like, well, I loved that album years ago and that tune, and then you think, oh, it's not all bad. You've got quite a lot of good things going on. So generally, you're just a lucky man to be doing what you're doing. If you have a wee break with injuries and other things, it's just a good tune, man.
That's a belter. And I've got to say, we never discussed this before. That's just by pure luck I mentioned that song. I'm delighted at that. I'm absolutely delighted at that. I love that tune. It's a great album. That's a great tune. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm sure people will really enjoy that. I've really enjoyed this chat with it. It's been phenomenal.
No, it's been no bad, man.
There's been a wee bit of banter.
There has been
slung about between us and Neil in the lead up to this, but it's all been good fun.
And certainly. You know what?
Thank you.
Stephen said at the start that I don't know if you'd said we're on the list or whatever, but this has been a long time coming. Stephen and I have spoken about getting you, even from maybe the first time we seen you down at the lakes, we thought that Neil McNichol would be all right on coming for a chat. You know what I mean? So it's actually great that it's happened. It was great to see you so close after your victory in July, and to get that, to get that buzz off of you, because that's exactly what was happening. So thank you very much. I'm going to hand over to Stephen for a final roundup, but thank you very much, Neil, and I wish you every success for the Bob Graham round at the end of September. Thank you for your time.
Watching
thanks,
that one.
No, thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks very much, Neil. It's been a pleasure to speak to you, and I've been looking forward to catching up with you, just to find out more about your running yourself and just your... it's like you've all your lessons learned that you've made yourself and all the mistakes that you've made yourself. I can hear you almost to your coaching clients saying... pouring all that experience and such out. I don't even care sometimes if you listen to your own lessons learned all the time yourself by some of the things that you said, which makes
I make plenty of mistakes.
Aye, and that makes it all the more refreshing, I think, because it's a case of, it's like, I'm the perfect coach, the perfect runner, the perfect athlete. They didn't exist. Everybody's still learning. And I think it's been really, really great to speak to you. So thank you so much for giving up a hour and a half of your time. And can't wait to see what happens down in the Lake District in a few weeks.
That'll be great. Yeah, can't wait to crack it. And then next year, Coniston, be brilliant again.
See you there.
Definitely.
Honour.
The big one. None of this 50 nonsense. Anybody can win the 50.
Happiness, more or less, it's just a change in me, something in my liberty on my mind. Happiness coming and going, I watch you look at me, watch my fever growing, I know just where I am. But how many corners do I have to turn? How many times do I have to learn? All the love I have is in my mind, but I'm a lucky man with fire in my hands. Happiness, something in my own place. I'm steady, naked, smiling, I feel no disgrace. Happiness coming and going, I watch you look at me, watch my feet are growing, I know just who I am. And how many corners do I have to turn? How many times do I have to run? All the love I have is in my mind. I hope you understand. I hope you defending my liberty. It's just a genuine something in my liberty.